already know where you live, which means they're already there. So it's pointless to try to be secretive once we're out of here. These are only scouts. The soldiers are on the way. They have the swords. The beasts won't be far behind. Time is short. At best, we have a day. At worst, they're already here.
My first thought, they already know where I live.
I panic.
Henri is at home, with Bernie Kosar. Then the soldiers and beasts may already be there. My second thought, her Sepan, dead 3 years now? Six has been alone that long, alone on a foreign planet since, what, the age of 13, 14?
He's at home,
I say.
Who? Henri, my Sepan. I'm sure he's fine. They won't touch him as long as you're free. It's you they want, and they'll use him to try to lure you.
Six says, then lifts her head towards the barred window. We turn and look with her. Speeding around the bend, coming towards the school very faintly so that nothing else can be seen, is a pair of headlights that slow, past the exit, then turn into the entrance and quickly disappear. Six turns back to us.
All the doors are blocked. How else can we get out?
I think about it, figuring that one of the unbarred windows in a different classroom is our best bet.
We can get out through the gymnasium,
Sarah says.
There's a passageway beneath the stage that opens like a cellar door in the back of the school.
Really? I ask. She nods, and I feel a sense of pride.
Each of you take a hand,
Six says. I take her right, Sarah her left.
Be as quiet as possible. As long as you hold my hands, you'll both be invisible. They won't be able to see us, but they'll hear us. Once we're outside, we'll run like hell. We'll never be able to escape them, not since they found us. The only way to escape is to kill them, every last one of them, before the others arrive. Okay,
I say.
Do you know what that means?
Six says. I shake my head. I'm not sure what she is asking me.
There's no escaping them now,
she says.
It means you're going to have to fight.
I mean to respond, but the shuffling I had heard earlier stops outside the door. Silence. Then the doorknob is jiggled. Number Six takes a deep breath and lets go of my hand.
Never mind sneaking out,
she says.
The war starts now.
She rushes up and thrusts her hands forward, and the door breaks away from the jam and crashes across the hallway. Splintered wood, shattered glass.
Turn your lights on,
she yells. I snap them on. A Mogadorian stands amid the rubble of the broken door. It smiles, blood seeping from the corner of its mouth where the door has hit it. Black eyes, pale skin, as though the sun has never touched it. A cave-dwelling creature risen from the dead. It throws something that I don't see, and I hear Six grunt beside me. I look into its eyes, and a pain tears through me so that I'm stuck where I am, unable to move. Darkness falls. Sadness. My body stiffens. A haze of pictures of the day of the invasion flicker through my mind. The death of women and children, my grandparents. Tears, screams, blood, heaps of burning bodies. Six breaks the spell by lifting the Mogadorian in the air and hurling it against the wall. It tries standing, and Six lifts it again, this time throwing it as hard as she can against one wall and then the other. The scout falls to the ground, twisted and broken, its chest rising once, and then becoming still. 1 or 2 seconds pass. Its entire body collapses into a pile of ash, accompanied by a sound similar to a bag of sand being dropped to the ground. What the hell? I ask, wondering how it's possible for the body to completely disintegrate like it just did.
Don't look into their eyes,
she yells, ignoring my confusion. I think of the writer of They Walk Among Us. I now understand what he went through when looking into their eyes. I wonder if he welcomed death when the time finally came, welcomed it just to be rid of the images that perpetually played in his mind. I can only imagine how intense they would have become had Six not broken the spell. Two other scouts sweep towards us from the end of the hall. A shroud of darkness surrounds them, as though they consume everything around them and turn it into black. Six stands tall in front of me, firm, chin held high. She is 2 inches shorter than I am, but her presence makes her seem 2 inches taller. Sarah stands behind me. Both Mogadorians stop where the hallway intersects with another, their teeth bared in a sneer. My body is tense, muscles burning with exhaustion. They take deep, rasping breaths, which is what we heard outside the door. They're breathing, not they're walking, watching us. And then a different noise fills the hallway, and the Mogadorians both turn their attention to it, a door being shaken as though somebody is trying to force it open. From out of nowhere, there comes the sound of a gun blast, followed by the school door being kicked open. They both look surprised, and as they turn to flee, two more blasts boom through the hallway, and both scouts are blown backwards. We hear the approaching sound of two sets of shoes and the click of a dog's toenails. Six tenses beside me, ready for whatever is coming our way. Henri! It was his truck's lights we saw enter the school grounds. He has a double-barreled shotgun I have never seen before. Bernie Kosar is at his side, and he comes sprinting towards me. I crouch down and lift him off the floor. He licks wildly at my face, and I'm so excited to see him that I almost forget to tell Six who the man with the shotgun is. "It's Henri," I say. "My sapon." Henri comes walking down, vigilant, looking at the classroom doors as he passes them, and behind him, carrying the Lorik chest in his arms, is Mark. I have no idea why Henri has brought him along. There is a crazed look in Henri's eyes, one of exhaustion, full of fear and worry. I expect the worst after the way I left the house. Some sort of scolding, perhaps a slap across the face, but he instead switches the shotgun to his left hand and hugs me as tightly as he can. I hug him back. "I'm sorry, Henri. I didn't know this would happen."
"I know you didn't. I'm just happy you're okay," he says. "Come on. We have to get out of here. The whole damn school is surrounded."
Sarah leads us to the safest room she can think of, which is the home economics kitchen down the hall. We lock the door behind us. Six moves three refrigerators in front of it to keep anything from entering, while Henri rushes to the windows and pulls the blinds down. Sarah walks straight into the kitchen we normally use, opens the drawer, and removes the biggest butcher's knife she can find. Mark watches her, and when he sees what she has done, he drops the chest to the floor and grabs a knife of his own. He rifles through other drawers and removes a meat tenderizer hammer and tucks it into the waistband of his pants.
"You guys okay?"
Henri asks. "Yes," I say.
"Aside from the dagger in my arm, yes, I'm fine," Six says.
I turn my lights on dimly and look at her arm. She wasn't kidding. Where the bicep meets the shoulder, a small dagger is sticking out. That was why I heard her gasp before she killed the scout. It had thrown a knife at her. Henri reaches up and pulls it free. She grunts.
"Thankfully, it's just a dagger," she says, looking at me. "The soldiers will have swords that glow with different sorts of powers."
I mean to ask what kind of powers, but Henri interrupts.
"Take this," he says,
and holds the shotgun out for Mark to take. He accepts it in his free hand without protest, staring in awe at everything he is witnessing around him. I wonder how much Henri has told him. I wonder why Henri brought him along in the first place. I look back at Six. Henri presses a rag to her arm, and she holds it in place. He steps over and lifts the chest and sets it on the nearest table.
"Here, John,"
he says. Without explanation, I help him unlock it. He throws the top open, reaches in, removes a flat rock every bit as dark as the aura surrounding the Mogadorians.
Six seems to know what the rock is for. She takes her shirt off. Beneath it, she is wearing a black and gray rubber suit, very similar to the silver and blue suit I saw my father wear in my flashbacks. She takes a deep breath, offers Henri her arm. Henri thrusts the rock against the gash, and Six, with her teeth clenched tightly, grunts and writhes in pain. Sweat beads across her forehead, her face bright red under the strain, tendons standing out on her neck. Henri holds it there for nearly a full minute. He pulls the stone away, and Six bends over at the waist, taking deep breaths to compose herself. I look at her arm. Aside from a bit of blood still glistening, the cut is completely healed. No scars. Nothing aside from the small tear in the suit. What is that? I ask, nodding to the rock.
It's a healing stone, says Henri.
Stuff like that really exists?
On Lorien it does, but the pain of healing is double that of the original pain caused by whatever has happened, and the stone only works when the injury was done with the intent to harm or kill, and the healing stone has to be used right away.
Intent? I ask. So the stone wouldn't work if I tripped and cut my head by accident?
No, Henri says. That's the whole point of legacies, defense and purity.
Would it work on Mark or Sarah?
I have no idea, Henri says. And I hope we don't have to find out.
Six catches her breath. She stands straight, feeling her arm. The red in her face begins to fade. Behind her, Bernie Kosar is running back and forth from the blocked door to the windows, which are placed too high off the ground for him to see out of. But he stands on his hind legs and tries anyway, growling at what he feels is out there. Maybe nothing, I think. Occasionally he bites at the air. Did you get my phone today when you were at the school? I ask Henri.
No,
he says.
I didn't grab anything.
It wasn't there when I went back.
Well, it wouldn't work here anyway. They've done something to our house and the school. The power is off, and no signals penetrate whatever sort of shield they've set up. All the clocks have stopped. Even the air seems dead.
We don't have much time, Six interrupts. Henri nods. A slight grin appears while he looks at her. A look of pride. Maybe even relief.
I remember you, he says.
I remember you too. Henri reaches out his hand, and Six shakes it.
It's shit good to see you again.
Damn good, I correct him, but he ignores me. I've been looking for you guys for a while, Six says.
Where is Katerina?
Henri asks. Six shakes her head. A mournful look crosses her face. She didn't make it. She died 3 years ago. I've been looking for the others since, you guys included.
I'm sorry, Henri says.
Six nods. She looks across the room at Bernie Kosar, who has just begun to growl ferociously. He seems to have grown tall enough so that his head is able to peek out the bottom of the window. Henri picks the shotgun up off the floor and walks to within 5 feet of the window.
John, turn your lights off, he says.
I comply.
Now, on my word, pull the blinds.
I walk to the side of the window and wrap the cord twice around my hand. I nod to Henri, and over his shoulder I see that Sarah has placed her palms against her ears in anticipation of the blast. He cocks the shotgun and aims it.
It's payback time,
he says. Then,
now.
I pull the cord and the blind flies up. Henri fires the shotgun. The sound is deafening, echoing in my ears for seconds after. He cocks the gun again, keeps it aimed. I twist my body to look out. Two fallen scouts are lying in the grass, unmoving. One of them is reduced to ash with the same hollow thud as the one in the hallway. Henri shoots the other a second time, and it does the same. Shadows seem to swarm around them,
6. Bring a fridge over.
Henri says to her. Mark and Sarah watch with amazement as the fridge floats in the air towards us and is positioned in front of the window to block the Mogadorians from entering or seeing into the room.
Better than nothing, Henri says. He turns to 6. How much time do we have?
Time is short, she says. They have an outpost 3 hours from here in a hollowed-out mountain in West Virginia.
Henri snaps the gun open, slides in 2 new cartridges, snaps it shut.
How many bullets does that hold? I ask.
10, he says.
Sarah and Mark whisper to each other. I walk over to them.
You guys okay?
I ask. Sarah nods. Mark shrugs, neither really knowing quite what to say in the terror of the situation.
I kiss Sarah on the cheek and take hold of her hand. Don't worry, they say. We'll get out of this.
I turn to 6 and Henri.
Why are they just out there waiting? I ask. Why don't they break a window and rush in? They know they have us outnumbered. They only want to keep us here, inside, 6 says. They have us exactly where they want us, all together, confined to one place. Now they're waiting for the others to arrive, the soldiers with the weapons, the ones who are skilled at killing. They're desperate now because they know we're developing our legacies. They can't afford to screw it up and risk us getting stronger. They know that some of us can now fight back.
We have to get out of here then,
Sarah pleads, her voice soft and shaky. 6 nods reassuringly to her, and then I remember something I had forgotten in all the excitement.
Wait, your being here, us being together, that breaks the charm. All the others are fair game now, I say. They can kill us at will.
I can see by the look of horror on Henri's face that it had slipped his mind as well. 6 nods.
I had to risk it, she says. We can't keep running, and I'm sick of waiting. We're all developing. All of us are ready to hit back. Let's not forget what they did to us that day, and I'm not going to forget what they did to Katerina. Everybody we know is dead. Our families, our friends. I think they're planning to do the same thing to Earth as they did to Lorien, and they are almost ready. To sit back and do nothing is to allow that same destruction, that same death and annihilation. Why stand back and let it happen? If this planet dies, we die with it.
Bernie Kosar is still barking at the window. I almost want to let him outside, see what he can do. His mouth is frothing with his teeth bared, hair standing tall down the center of his back. The dog is ready, I think. The question is, are the rest of us?
Well, you're here now, Henri says. Let's hope the others are safe. Let's hope they can fend for themselves. Both of you will know immediately if they can't. As for us, war has come to our doorstep. We didn't ask for it. But now that it's here, we have no choice but to meet it, head on, with full force, he says.
He lifts his head and looks at us, the whites of his eyes glistening through the dark of the room.
I agree with you, 6, he says. The time has come.
Chapter 30. Wind from the open window rushes into the home economics room, the refrigerator in front of it doing little to prevent the cold air. The school is already chilly from the electricity being off. 6 is now wearing only the rubber suit, which is entirely black, aside from a gray band slicing diagonally down the front of it. She is standing in the middle of our group, with such poise and confidence, that I wish I had a Lorik suit of my own. She opens her mouth to speak, but is interrupted by a loud boom from outside. All of us rush to the windows, but can see nothing of what is happening. The crash is followed by several loud bangs, and the sound of tearing, gnashing, something being destroyed. What's happening? I ask.
Your lights,
Henri says over the sounds of destruction. I turn them on and sweep them across the yard outside. They reach but 10 feet before being swallowed by the darkness. Henri steps back and tilts his head, listening to the sounds in extreme concentration, and then he nods in resigned acceptance.
They are destroying all the cars out there, my truck included.
He says,
if we survive this and escape this school, it'll have to be on foot.
Terror sweeps across both Mark's and Sarah's faces.
We can't waste any more time, Six says. Strategy or no strategy, we have to go before the beasts and soldiers arrive. She said we can get out through the gymnasium, Six says, and nods at Sarah. It's our only hope.
Her name is Sarah, I say. I sit in a nearby chair, unnerved by the urgency in Six's voice. She seems to be the steady one, the one who has remained calm under the weight of the terrors we have seen thus far. Bernie Kosar is back at the door, scratching at the fridges that are blocking it, growling and whining in impatience. Since my lights are on, Six has a good look at him for the first time. She stares at Bernie Kosar, then squints her eyes and inches her face forward. She walks over and bends down to pet him. I turn and look at her. I find it odd that she is grinning. What? I ask. She looks up at me.
You don't know.
Know what? Her grin widens. She looks back at Bernie Kosar, who races away from her and charges back to the window, scratching at it, growling, the occasional bark in frustration. The school is surrounded, death imminent, almost certain, and Six is grinning. It irritates me.
Your dog, she says. You really don't know?
No, says Henri.
I look at him. He shakes his head at Six.
What the hell?
I ask.
What?
Six looks at me, then at Henri. She emits a half laugh and opens her mouth to speak. But just before any words escape, something catches her eye, and she rushes back to the window. We follow, and, as before, the very subtle glow of a set of headlights sweeps around the bend in the road and into the lot of the school. Another car. Maybe a coach or teacher. I close my eyes and take a deep breath. It could mean nothing, I say.
Turn your lights off,
Henri says to me. I turn them off, clench my hands into fists. Something about the car outside causes anger within me. The hell with the exhaustion, with the shakes that have been present ever since I jumped through the principal's window. I can't take being confined in this room any longer, knowing that the Mogadorians are out there, waiting and plotting our doom. That car outside may be the first of the soldiers arriving on the scene. But just when that thought pops into my mind, we see the lights quickly retreat from the lot and speed away in a hurry down the same road they came.
We have to get out of this damn school, Henri says.
Henri sits in a chair 10 feet away from the door, with the shotgun aimed right at it. He is breathing slowly, though he is tense, and I can see the muscles flexed in his jaw. None of us say a word. Six made herself invisible and slipped out to do some exploring. We're just waiting. And finally, it comes. 3 slight taps on the door. Six's knock, so that we know it's her and not a scout trying to enter. Henri lowers the gun, and she walks in, and I return one of the fridges to block the door behind her. She was gone for a full 10 minutes.
You were right, she says to Henri. They've destroyed every car in the lot, and have somehow moved the wreckage to block every door from being opened. And Sarah is right. They've overlooked the stage hatch. I counted 7 scouts outside and 5 inside walking the halls. There was one outside this door, but it's been disposed of. They seem to be getting antsy. I think that means the others should have been here already, which means they can't be far.
Henri stands and grabs the chest and nods at me. I help him open it. He reaches in and pulls out a few small round pebbles that he sticks in his pocket. I have no idea what they are. Then he closes and locks the chest, and slides it into one of the ovens and closes the door. I move a refrigerator up against the oven to keep it from being opened. There really is no other choice. The chest is heavy. It would be impossible to fight while carrying it, and we need every available hand to get out of this mess.
I hate to leave it behind,
Henri says, shaking his head. Six nods uneasily. Something in the thought of the Mogadorians getting a hold of the chest terrifies them both. "It'll be fine here," I say. Henri lifts the shotgun and pumps it once, looks at Sarah and Mark.
"This isn't your fight," he tells them. "I don't know what to expect out there, but if this thing goes badly, you guys get back in this school and stay hidden. They aren't after you, and I don't think they'll care to come looking if they already have us."
Sarah and Mark both look stricken with fear, both holding their respective knives with white-knuckled grips in their right hands. Mark has lined his belt with everything from the kitchen drawers that might be of use. More knives, the meat tenderizer, cheese grater, a pair of scissors. We go left out of this room, and when we reach the end of the hall, the gymnasium is past double doors 20 or so feet to the right, I say to Henri.
"The hatch is in the very middle of the stage," Six says. "It's covered with a blue mat. There were no scouts in the gym, but that doesn't mean they won't be there this time around."
"So we're just going to go outside and try to outrun them?" Sarah asks. Her voice is full of panic. She's breathing heavily.
"It's our only choice,"
says Henri.
I grab her hand. She is shaking badly. "It'll be okay," I say.
"How do you know that?"
she says in a more demanding tone than a questioning one.
"I don't," I say.
Six moves the fridge from the door. Bernie Kosar immediately starts scratching at the door, trying to get out, growling.
"I can't make you all invisible,"
Six says.
"If I disappear, I'll still be nearby."
Six grabs hold of the doorknob, and Sarah takes a deep, shaky breath beside me, squeezing my hand as tightly as she can. I can see the knife quivering in her right hand.
"Stay close to me," I say.
"I'm not leaving your side."
The door swings open, and Six jumps out into the hall, Henri close behind. I follow, and Bernie Kosar races ahead of us all, a ball of fury speeding away. Henri points the shotgun one way, then the other. The hallway is empty. Bernie Kosar has already reached the intersection. He disappears. Six follows suit and makes herself invisible, and the rest of us run towards the gym, Henri in the lead. I make Mark and Sarah go ahead of me. None of us can really see a thing, can only hear each other's footsteps. I turn my lights on to help guide the way, and that's the first mistake I make. A classroom door to my right swings open. Everything happens in a split second, and before I have a chance to react, I am hit in the shoulder with something heavy. My lights shut off. I crash straight through a glass display window. I'm cut on the top of my head, and blood runs down the side of my face almost immediately. Sarah screams. Whatever it was that hit me clubs me again, a hollow thud in my ribs that knocks the wind from me.
"Turn your lights on,"
Henri yells. I do. A scout stands over me, holding a 6-foot-long piece of wood that it must have found in the industrial arts classroom. It raises it in the air to hit me again, but Henri, standing 20 feet away, fires the shotgun first. The scout's head disappears, blown to pieces. The rest of its body turns to ash before it even hits the floor. Henri lowers the gun.
"Shit,"
he says, catching sight of the blood. He takes a step towards me, and then, from the corner of my eye, I see another scout. In the same doorway, a sledgehammer raised over its head. It comes charging forward, and, with telekinesis, I throw the nearest thing to me without even knowing what that thing is. A golden, glinting object that speeds through the air with violence. It hits the scout so hard that its skull cracks on impact, and then it falls to the ground and lies motionless. Henri, Mark, and Sarah rush over. The scout is still alive, and Henri takes Sarah's knife and thrusts it through its chest, reducing it to a pile of ash. He hands Sarah back her knife. She holds it out in front of her, between thumb and forefinger, as though she's just been handed a pair of somebody's dirty underwear. Mark bends down and lifts the object I had thrown, now in 3 separate pieces.
"It's my all-conference trophy," he says,
and then can't help but chuckle to himself.
"It was given to me last month.
I stand. It was the trophy case that I crashed through.
You okay?
Henri asks, looking at the cut. Yeah, I'm fine. Let's keep going. We rush down the hall and into the gymnasium, sprint across the floor, jump up onto the stage. I flip my lights on to see the blue mat being moved away as though of its own volition. Then the hatch is thrown up. Only then does Six make herself visible again.
What happened back there? She asks.
Ran into a little bit of trouble, Henri says, climbing down the ladder first to make sure the coast is clear. Then Sarah and Mark go.
Where is the dog?
I ask. Six shakes her head.
Go on,
I say. She goes down first, leaving only me on the stage. I whistle as loudly as I can, knowing full well that I'm giving away my position by doing so. I wait.
Come on, John,
Henri calls up from below. I crawl into the hatch, my feet on the ladder, but from the waist up I'm still on the stage, watching.
Come on, I say to myself, where are you?
And in that split second, when I have no choice but to give up, but just before I drop down, Bernie Kosar materializes on the far side of the gym and comes sprinting my way, ears pinned to the sides of his head. I smile.
Come on!
Henri yells this time.
Hold on!
I yell back. Bernie Kosar jumps onto the stage and into my arms.
Here!
I yell and hand the dog to Six. I drop down, close and lock the hatch, and turn my lights on as brightly as they'll go. The walls and floor are made of concrete, reeking of mildew. We have to walk in a low crouch to keep from hitting our heads. Six leads the way. The tunnel is about 100 feet long, and I have no idea what purpose this could have served at one time. We reach the end. A short flight of steps leads to a pair of metal cellar doors. Six waits until everyone is together.
Where does this open? I ask. Behind the faculty lot, Sarah says. Not far from the football field.
Six presses her ear to listen in the small crack between the closed doors. Nothing but the wind. Everyone's face is streaked with sweat, dust, and fear. Six looks at Henri and nods. I turn my lights off.
All right,
she says, and makes herself invisible. She inches the door up, just enough to stick her head out and have a look around. The rest of us watch with bated breath, waiting, listening. All of us racked with nerves. She turns one way, then the other. Satisfied we've made it unnoticed, she pushes the door all the way open, and we file out, one by one. Everything is dark and silent. No wind. The forest trees to our right standing motionless. I look around, can see the busted silhouettes of the twisted cars piled in front of the doors of the school. No stars or moon. No sky at all. Almost as though we're beneath a bubble of darkness, some sort of dome where only shadows remain. Bernie Kosar begins to growl, low at first, so that my initial thought is that it's done for reasons of anxiety only. But the growl grows into something more ferocious, more menacing, and I know that he senses something out there. All of our heads turn to see what he is growling at, but nothing moves. I take a step forward to put Sarah behind me. I think to turn on my lights, but I know that will give us away even more so than the dog's growl. Suddenly, Bernie Kosar takes off. He charges ahead 30 yards before leaping through the air and sinking his teeth deeply into one of the unseen scouts, who materializes from out of nowhere as though some spell of invisibility has been broken. In an instant, we're able to see them all. Surrounding us, no fewer than 20 of them, who begin closing in.
It was a trap,
Henri yells, and fires twice and drops 2 scouts immediately.
Get back in the tunnel,
I scream to Mark and Sarah. One of the scouts comes charging towards me. I lift it in the air and hurl it as hard as I can against an oak tree 20 yards away. It hits the ground with a thud, quickly stands, and hurls a dagger my way. I deflect it and lift the scout again and throw it even harder. It bursts into ash at the base of the tree. Henri unloads more rounds, the shots echoing. Two hands grab me from behind. I almost deflect them until I realize that it's Sarah. Six is nowhere to be seen. Bernie Kosar has brought a Mogadorian to the ground, his teeth now sunk deeply into its throat, hell ablaze in the dog's eyes. "Get into the school!" I yell. She doesn't let go. A clap of thunder breaks through the silence, and a storm begins to brew. Dark clouds now forming overhead, with flashes of lightning and thunder tearing through the night sky. Loud, pounding thunder that makes Sarah jump each time one booms. Six has reappeared, standing 30 feet away, her eyes to the sky, and her face twisted in concentration with both arms raised. She's the one creating the storm, controlling the weather. Bolts of lightning begin raining down, striking the scouts dead where they stand, creating small explosions that form clouds of ash that drift listlessly across the yard. Henri stands off to the side, loading more shells into the shotgun. The scout that Bernie Kosar is choking finally succumbs to death and bursts into a heap of ash covering the dog's face. He sneezes once, shakes the ash from his coat, and then rushes off and chases the closest scout until they both disappear into the dense woods 50 yards away. I have this unbearable fear that I've seen him for the very last time. "You have to get into the school," I say to Sarah. "You have to go now, and you have to hide." "Mark!" I yell. I look up and don't see him. I snap around. I catch sight of him sprinting towards Henri, who is still loading his gun. At first, I don't understand why. And then I see what is happening. A Mogadorian scout has snuck up on Henri without his knowing it. "Henri!" I scream to get his attention. I lift my hand to stop the scout with its knife raised high in the air. But Mark tackles the thing first. A wrestling match ensues. Henri snaps the shotgun closed, and Mark kicks the scout's knife away. Henri fires, and the scout explodes. Henri says something to Mark. I yell for Mark again, and he sprints over, breathing heavily. "You have to take Sarah into the school." "I can help here," he says. "It's not your fight. You have to hide. Get in the school and hide with Sarah." "Okay," he says. "You have to stay hidden, no matter what," I yell over the storm. "They won't come for you. It's me they want. Promise me, Mark. Promise me you'll stay hidden with Sarah." Mark nods rapidly. "I promise." Sarah is crying, and there's no time to comfort her. Another clap of thunder, another shotgun blast. She kisses me one time on the lips, her hands holding tightly to my face, and I know she would stay like this forever. Mark pulls her off, begins leading her away. "I love you," she says, and in her eyes she is staring at me in the same way that I had stared at her earlier, before I left Home Ec, as though she may be seeing me for the final time, wanting to remember it so that this last image might last a lifetime. "I love you too," I mouth back just as the two of them reach the steps of the tunnel, and as soon as the words leave my lips, Henri cries out in pain. I turn. One of the scouts has thrust a knife into his gut. Terror sweeps through me. The scout pulls the knife from Henri's side, the blade glistening with his blood. It thrusts down to stab Henri a second time. My hand reaches out for it, and I rip the knife away at the last second so that it is only a fist that hits Henri. He grunts, gathers himself, and presses the barrel of the shotgun to the chin of the scout, and fires. The scout drops, headless. The rain starts, a cold, heavy rain. In no time at all, I'm soaked to the bone. Blood leaks from Henri's gut. He's aiming the shotgun into the darkness, but all of the scouts have moved into the shadows, away from us, so that Henri can't get a good enough aim. They're no longer interested in attacking, knowing that two of us have retreated and a third has been wounded. Six is still reaching for the sky. The storm has grown. The wind is beginning to howl. She seems to be having trouble controlling it. A winter storm. Thunder in January. As quickly as everything started, it all seems to stop. The thunder, the lightning, the rain. The wind dies away, and a low groan begins to grow from off in the distance. Six lowers her arms. All of us straining to listen. Even the Mogadorians turn. The groan grows, unmistakably coming our way. Some sort of deep mechanical groan. The scouts step from the shadows and begin to laugh. Despite our killing at least 10 of them, there are many more than before. From far off, a cloud of smoke rises over the tops of the trees, as if a steam engine is coming around the bend. The scouts nod to one another, smiling their wicked smiles, and reform their circle around us in what is an apparent attempt to get us back into the school. And it's obvious that that is our only choice. Six walks over. "What is it?" I ask. Henri hobbles, the shotgun hanging limply at his side. He's breathing heavily, a gash on his cheek below his right eye, a circular puddle of blood on his gray sweater from the knife wound.
"It's the rest of them, isn't it?"
Henri asks Six. Six looks at him, stricken, her hair wet and clinging to the sides of her face.
"The beasts," she says, "and the soldiers. They're here."
Henri cocks the shotgun and takes a deep breath.
"And so the real war begins,"
he says.
"I don't know about you two, but if this is it, then this is it. I, for one..."
he says and trails off.
"Well, I'll be damned if I go down without a fight."
Six nods.
"Our people fought back till the end, and so shall I," she says.
A mile off, the smoke still rises. Live cargo, I think. That is how they transport them, by oversized semi-trucks. Six and I follow Henri back down the steps. A yell for Bernie Kosar, but he's nowhere to be seen.
"We can't wait for him again,"
Henri says.
"There isn't time."
I look around one final time and slam the cellar doors shut. We rush back through the tunnel, up onto the stage, across the gymnasium. We don't see a single scout, nor do we see Mark and Sarah, and I'm relieved by that. I hope they are well hidden, and I hope Mark keeps his promise and that they stay that way. When we make it back to the home ec room, I slide the fridge out of the way and grab the chest. Henri and I open it. Six takes the healing stone out and thrusts it against Henri's gut. He is silent, his eyes closed, holding his breath. His face is red under the strain, but not a single sound escapes. A minute of this, and Six pulls the stone away. The cut has healed. Henri exhales, his forehead covered in sweat. Then it's my turn. She presses it to the gash on my head, and a pain, far greater than anything I've ever felt before, rips through me. I grunt and groan, every muscle in my body flexing. I can't breathe until it's over, and when it finally is, I bend over and catch my breath for a full minute. Outside, the mechanical groan has stopped. The semi is hidden from view. While Henri closes up the chest and places it back in the same oven as before, I look out the window, hoping to catch sight of Bernie Kosar. I don't see him. Another set of headlights passes by the school. As before, I can't tell if it's a car or truck, and it slows as it drives by the entrance, then quickly speeds away without turning in. Henri pushes his shirt down, picks up the shotgun. As we move towards the door, a sound stops the three of us dead in our tracks. A roar comes from outside. Loud, animal-like. A sinister roar unlike anything I have ever heard before, followed by the sound of the metallic clicks of a gate being unlocked, lowered, and opened. A loud bang snaps us all back to attention. I take another deep breath. Henri shakes his head and sighs in what is an almost hopeless gesture. A gesture made when the fight is lost. There's always hope, Henri, I say. He turns and looks at me. New developments have yet to present themselves. Not all the information is in. Don't give up hope just yet. He nods, and the tiniest trace of a smile forms. He looks at Six. A new development that I don't think either of us could have imagined. Who's to say that there aren't more waiting? And then he picks up where I left off, quoting the exact words he spoke to me when I was the one who was discouraged. The day I asked how we could possibly expect to win this fight, alone and outnumbered, far from home, against the Mogadorians, who seemed to take great joy in war and death.
It's the last thing to go,
Henri says.
When you have lost hope, you have lost everything. And when you think all is lost, when all is dire and bleak, there is always hope.
Exactly, I say. Chapter 31. Another roar cuts through the night air, through the walls of the school, a roar that makes my blood turn cold. The ground begins to rumble under the footsteps of the beast that must now be on the loose. I shake my head. I saw firsthand how big they were during the flashbacks of the war on Lorien.
For your friend's sake, and ours, Six says, we better get the hell out of this school while there's still time. They'll destroy the entire building trying to get to us.
We nod to one another.
Our only hope is to get to the woods,
Henri says.
Whatever that thing is, we might be able to escape it if we can stay invisible.
Six nods.
Just keep a hold of my hands.
Needing no other motivation than that, Henri and I each take a hand.
As quietly as we can,
Henri says. The hallway is dark and silent. We walk with a quiet urgency, moving as swiftly as we can while making little noise. Another roar. And in the middle of it, another roar begins. We stop. Not one beast, but two. We continue on and enter the gymnasium. No sign of the scouts. When we reach the very center of the court, Henri stops. I look over, but can't see him.
Why are we stopped?
I whisper.
Shh,
he says.
Listen.
I strain to listen, but hear nothing aside from the steady hum of blood filling my ears.
The beasts have stopped moving,
Henri says.
So what?
Shh, he says.
There's something else out there.
And then I hear it too. Slight, high-pitched yipping sounds, as though coming from small animals. The sounds are muffled, though obviously growing louder.
What the hell?
I ask. Something begins banging at the stage hatch, the hatch we are hoping to escape through.
Turn your lights on, he says.
I let go of Six's hand, snap them on, and aim them towards the stage. Henri looks down the end of the shotgun barrel. The hatch bounces up, as though something is trying to force itself through, but lacks the strength to do so. The weasels, I think. The stout-bodied little creatures that the guys in Athens were terrified of. One of them hits the hatch so hard that it breaks away from the stage and rattles across the floor. So much for thinking they lacked strength. Two of them come bursting forth, and upon catching sight of us, come racing our way so swiftly that I can hardly make them out. Henri stands, watching with the gun aimed, an amused grin on his face. Their paths diverge, and both leap from about 20 feet away, one jumping at Henri, the other coming at me. Henri fires once, and the weasel explodes and covers him with its blood and guts. And just as I'm about to rip apart the second with telekinesis, it is snatched out of midair by Six's unseen hand and spiked to the ground like a football, killing it instantly. Henri cocks the shotgun.
Well, that wasn't so bad,
he says, and before I can respond, the entire wall along the stage is smashed in by the fist of a beast. It draws back and punches again, smashing the stage to smithereens and exposing the night sky. The impact pushes both Henri and me backwards.
"Run!"
Henri yells, and he immediately unloads every shell in the shotgun into the beast. They have no effect upon it. The beast leans forward and roars so loudly that I feel my clothes flutter. A hand reaches out and grabs hold of me, turning me invisible. The beast charges ahead, moving straight for Henri, and I'm gripped with terror at what it might do.
"No!"
I scream. "To Henri! Get to Henri!" I twist under Six's grip, finally grabbing hold of her and pushing her away. I become visible. She stays hidden. The beast surges towards Henri, who stands firm and watches it come. Out of bullets. Out of options.
"Get to him!"
I scream again.
"Get to him, Six! Go to the woods!"
she yells back. All I can do is watch. The beast must stand 30 feet tall, maybe 40, towering over Henri. It roars, pure wrath in its eyes. Its muscled and bulging fist rushes high in the air, so high that it breaks straight through the rafters and the roof of the school gymnasium. And then it falls, speeding down with such swiftness that it becomes a blur, like the blades of a spinning fan. I cry out in horror, knowing that Henri is about to be crushed. I can't look away, Henri seeming tiny standing there with the shotgun limply at his side. When the fist of the beast is a split second from him, Henri disappears. The fist crashes through the gymnasium floor, the wood splintering, the impact sending me crashing into the stands 20 feet away. The beast turns to me, blocking from view the place where Henri had just stood.
"Henri!"
I yell. The beast roars so that any response that might have come is drowned out. It takes one step towards me. "To the woods," Six had said. "Go to the woods." I stand and run as fast as I can to the back of the gym where the beast had just broken through. I turn to see if the beast is following. It is not. Perhaps Six has done something to divert its attention. All I know is that I'm on my own now, alone. I leap over the pile of rubble and sprint away from the school, running as hard as I can for the woods. The shadows swarm around me, following like villainous wraiths. I know that I cannot run them. The beast roars, and I hear another wall crumble. I reach the trees, and the swarming shadows seem to have disappeared. I stop and listen. The trees sway under a light breeze. There is a wind here. I've escaped whatever dome the Mogadorians have created. Something warm collects at the waistband of my pants. The cut I suffered at Mark James's has reopened on my back. The school's silhouette is faint from where I stand. The entire gymnasium is gone, a pile of brick. The beast's shadow stands tall in the rubble of the cafeteria. Why hasn't it run after me? And where is the second beast we all heard? The beast's fist falls again, another room demolished. Mark and Sarah are there somewhere. I told them to go back, and I realize how foolish it was. I didn't anticipate the beast destroying the school if it knew I wasn't there. I have to do something to get the beast away. I take a deep breath to gather my strength, and as soon as I take that first step, something hard hits me in the back of the head. I fall face first into the mud. I touch where I've been hit, and my hand is covered in blood, drips of it falling from my fingertips. I turn around and see nothing at first, and then it steps out of the shadows and grins. A soldier. This is what they look like. Taller than the scouts. 7, maybe 8 feet tall. Its muscles bulging beneath a black ragged cloak. Large, raised veins traverse the length of each arm. Black boots. Nothing covering its head, and its hair falling to its shoulders. The same pale, waxy skin as the scouts. A grin of self-assurance, of finality. and one of its hands is a sword, long and shimmering, made of some kind of metal I've never seen here on Earth or in my visions of Lorien, and it appears to be pulsing, as if it is somehow alive. I begin to crawl away, the blood dripping down my neck. The beast at the school lets out another roar, and I reach for the low branches of a nearby tree and pull myself up. The soldier is 10 feet away. I grip both hands into fists. It motions the sword nonchalantly towards me, and something comes out of its tip, something that looks like a small dagger. I watch the dagger twist in an arc, leaving a slight trail behind it, like smoke from a plane. The light casts a spell that I can't look away from. A flash of bright light devours everything, the world dimming away into a soundless void. No walls, no sound, no floor or ceiling. Very slowly the shapes of things return. The trees standing like ancient effigies, whispering of the world that once was, in some alternate realm where only shadows reside. I reach out to feel the nearest tree, the only touch of gray in an otherwise white world. My hand goes through it, and for a moment, the tree shimmers as if it were liquid. I take a deep breath. When I exhale, the pain returns to the gash on the back of my head, and the tears down my arms and body from the James House fire. A sound of dripping water comes from somewhere. Slowly, the soldier takes form, 20 or 30 feet away. Giant-like. We take each other in, its sword glowing more brightly in this new world, its eyes narrow, and my hands again clench into fists. I've lifted objects far heavier than it. I've split trees and I've caused destruction. Surely I can match its strength with my own. I push everything that I feel into the core of my being, everything that I am, and everything that I will be, until I feel as though I'm about to burst. Yeah! I yell, and I thrust my arms forward. The brute force leaves my body, raging towards the soldier. At the same time, it sweeps the sword across its body as though swatting a fly. The power deflects into the trees, which dance for a brief moment like the grain in a wheat field waving in a light wind, and then they become still. It laughs at me. A deep, guttural laugh meant to taunt. Its red eyes begin to glow, swirling as though lava filled. It lifts its free hand, and I tense myself against the unknown. And without my knowing what has happened, my throat is in its grip. The gap that had separated us closed in the blink of an eye. It lifts me, one-handed, breathing with its mouth open so that I can smell the sour stench of its breath, the smell of decay. I thrash, try to pry its fingers from around my throat, but they are like iron. And then it throws me. I land on my back 40 feet away. I stand. And it charges, swinging the sword at my head, which I duck and counter by pushing it as hard as I can. It stumbles back, but stays standing. I try to lift it with telekinesis, but nothing happens. In this alternate world, my powers are dimmed, almost ineffectual. The Mogadorian has the advantage here. It smiles at my futility, and raises the sword with both hands. The sword comes alive, turning from shimmering silver into ice blue. Blue flames lick across the blade, a sword that glows with power, just as Six had talked about. It swings the sword in my direction, and another dagger comes flying off the tip, straight at me. This I can do, I think. All the hours in the backyard with Henri preparing for this very thing, always the knives, more or less the same as a dagger. Did Henri know they would use them? Certainly, though in my flashbacks of the invasion, I had never seen them. But I had never seen these creatures either. They were different on Lorien. Not quite as sinister looking. On the day of the invasion, they looked sickly and starved. Is it Earth's fault for this convalescence? Have the resources here caused them to grow stronger and healthier? The dagger literally screams as it rages towards me. It grows and becomes consumed in flames. Just when I am about to deflect it, it explodes into a ball of fire, and the flames jump.